faulty mortgage securities tied to the 2008 financial crisis. The bank has been under investigation by federal authorities for faulty mortgage securities that fueled the housing bubble a decade ago. The settlement is far higher than the $4 billion Citigroup had offered to settle, but less than the $10 billion the government was seeking, according to a Wall Street Journal report. The settlement, coming after the Justice Department threatened to sue Citigroup if it didn't settle, could be announced within a week. Citigroup is scheduled to report second quarter results Monday. J.P. Morgan paid a $13 billion settlement in November, the largest in U.S. history, to settle charges over selling bad loans. Prosecutors still are seeking $2.1 billion from Bank of America for knowingly selling bad loans. With an IRN, USA Business News Update, I'm Hope Duggar.
Owning and caring for a home comes with a lot of to-dos. Fix the AC, build a deck, remodel the kitchen. Whatever your home improvement need, Home Advisor can help you find a pro you can trust to get the job done right. Go to rebuild.homeadvisor.com for instant access to top-rated pros in your area, including electricians, handymen, remodelers, whatever type of home pro you need. Home Advisor is absolutely free to use. At Home Advisor, you don't have to search through a long list of pros. With just a few clicks, Home Advisor matches you with pros who provide the exact services you need. You can read customer reviews of the pros, even use the cost guide to find out what hundreds of other home projects cost in your area. Because Home Advisor knows it's important to find a pro you can trust in your home, they conduct background checks on their service professionals. It's just one of the reasons more than 25 million homeowners have used Home Advisor. Go to rebuildhomeadvisor.com to find the right pro for your project. That's rebuild.homeadvisor.com.
Hi, I'm Montel Williams. Most of you know me as a talk show host, but I'm also an author, actor, single father of four, avid snowboarder, and I'm also a medical marijuana patient. Living with multiple sclerosis, I'm in pain every day. Medical marijuana is my last resort, and it helps me when all other drugs have failed. If you'd like more information about medical marijuana, you can contact the Marijuana Policy Project at MPP.org or call 1-877-JOIN-MPP.
Destination for education and entertainment.
This news update on WebmasterRadio.fm is brought to you by the WebmasterRadio.fm mobile app. Listen to our 24-hour live stream from anywhere or download any WebmasterRadio.fm program on demand anytime. Download the WebmasterRadio.fm mobile app inside the iTunes App Store or through Google Play.
WebmasterRadio.fm, we're everywhere.
IRN USA Radio News, I'm Hope Duggar. House Speaker John Boehner is criticizing President Obama's plan to cope with a tide of minors from Central America who are illegally crossing the U.S. border, but the Ohio Republican also is being noncommittal on whether the House would vote to approve the president's request.
If we don't secure the border, nothing's going to change. And if you look at the president's request, it's all more about continuing to deal with the problem.
Tuesday, Obama asked Congress for $3.7 billion to help increase the detention, care, and transportation of unaccompanied children, bolster immigration courts, and step up prosecutions of smuggling networks. The money would also increase surveillance at the porous U.S. border. Former New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin has been sentenced to 10 years in prison for his conviction on bribery, money laundering, and other corruption charges. Prosecutors said the actions for which he was convicted spanned his two terms as mayor, including the chaotic years after Hurricane Katrina hit in 2005. U.S. District Judge Helen Berrigan handed down the sentence this morning. This is IRN USA Radio News.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
And once again, we're live here at WebmasterRadio.fm and our studios here in South Florida, USA. We're getting ready to go and bring you a live cyber law and business report, and we hope you'll get a chance to tune in. So gather all friends you can, and make sure to go and join us right now on our website or tell them to go ahead and download the new webmasterradio.fm mobile app that's available in the iTunes App Store or Google Play. And coming up on the program this afternoon is, right now we're going to be speaking, right now Bennett Kelly will be speaking with former high-level National Security Agency intelligence official William Binney on the program about a new whistleblower website. So those listening about NSA, Edward Snowden, that kind of jazz, make sure to tune in for a great program. It's starting live right now.
Podcasting to millions from WebmasterRadio.fm's world headquarters.
From the Tropic of Technology, a service of New Gen Broadcasting.
Downloading
the Cyber Law and Business Report.
Only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Good morning. This is Bennett Kelly. You're listening to Cyber Law and Business Report, broadcasting live from the Internet Law Center here in Santa Monica, California, the heart of Silicon Beach. And please be seated. We got a great session for you today. We're going to be talking about the NSA and the state of cyber surveillance. And we have with us, you know, before there was Edward Snowden, there was Bill Binney. And he's a very significant figure in the whole NSA debate. He's just back from Germany and having testified at the Bundestag there. And so we're going to be talking with him in just a second. Afterwards, we're going to cover some news updates, and it looks like there's a breaking story developing, a possible criminal investigation involving ripoff report. And we'll have more on that later in the hour. But without further ado, I'd like to bring on Bill Binney. Bill, he is a former NSA crypto mathematician, and he was considered one of the best in his field in terms of cryptology and as an NSA agent. And he's also an outspoken whistleblower, speaking out after his retirement and speaking out about some of the expansion of the NSA authority after 9/11. And the NSA actually took him on and he won. So here to tell us his story and about their new activities. Bill, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on. And why don't you just give us a little nutshell summary of what your career was with the NSA?
I was there first in the United States Army for about close to 4 years, from 1965 to 1969, and then from 1970 on to 2001, almost the end of 2001, I was working as a civilian there at NSA. So I was primarily looking at the Soviet Union, the Warsaw Pact, the evil empire, if you will, in the old days, the Cold War. So that was my job primarily then, and that was pretty much close to 30 years of that was what I was doing. And then middle of the 90s, I started looking else around the world because I became the technical director of the world. So I had to look at technical problems that the NSA had around all the countries in the world. So then I started focusing on, after the wall fell, looking at the digital explosion, because that was the major problem that we had then. And that's what I was working on from 97 to 2001. And at that point, I devised ways and means to handle that kind of volume of communications. And the government, in turn, transferred and started to use that internally against everybody in the United States after 9/11. And that's part of what I could not be a party to. And so that point, I just had to leave. So that was my the end of my career there.
So you said you had to leave. So did you have debates internally with the within the NSA about, you know, is this appropriate? Are we going too far?
Well, actually, I had designed a system to give privacy protection to not just, well, to virtually everybody in the world, because I had designed in focused attacks on known terrorists and anybody in close proximity to them in relationships and so on. So it was really a focused attack that only took in relevant data that for analysts to look at. So it made a rich environment for them to use to, to analyze and succeed at doing their job. And in the process, it gave privacy to everybody in the world. And for anybody that was a U.S. citizen that got pulled into that, all their attributes would be encrypted. So you could tell it was a U.S. citizen simply because the data was encrypted, but you couldn't tell who it was. So those things were already all built into the system I put together for them to analyze all this material, but they subverted that, too. They basically removed all of the protections and eliminated the focused attack and took in everything. So that was something that I couldn't be a party to, and I just had to leave.
And so as you left, what was that a contentious event, or were they, or was the feeling like, well, we disagree, maybe it's good to move on?
Well, I don't. I think they were just glad to get rid of me because I was too much of a straight shooter, you know, a constitutionalist right to the end. So that's when I started objecting internally in government. So that's from there I went into the intelligence committees because their job was supposed to be to protect the privacy of U.S. citizens, and of course they failed miserably at that. Now they're basically advocates for spying domestically. So. I mean, their charter was not to do that. Their charter was to protect, as a result of the Church Committee investigations on NSA, FBI, and CIA back in the 70s. Their charter and their reason for existence was to ensure that those agencies didn't spy on U.S. citizens. And now here they are advocating domestic spying on everybody in the country.
Who did you go to first?
I went to the House Intelligence Committee. Diane Rourke, who I knew on the Intelligence Committee, I went to her and because she was a strong supporter of law and constitution, so.
And Diane, that was a staff person, or is that a?
Yeah, she was the House Intelligence Committee staffer in charge of the NSA account for the last 5 years or so that she was working for that committee.
Okay, and what was the response?
Well, her response was that this was obviously an illegal activity and should be stopped. And, I mean, that was the entire purpose and reason why that committee was created. That was also true of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, too. They were to ensure that no U.S. citizen was spied on by any of those agencies unless they had a warrant. And the point is that under the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, you know, the warrants mean if you issue a warrant, you have to state specifically who you're after, specifically what kind of data you're after, and specifically where you're going to get it.
Right.
So it's not like here is that Verizon court order that says go after 110 unnamed U.S. citizens, over 110 million unnamed U.S. citizens, anywhere they are. It doesn't meet any of the requirements of the Fourth Amendment.
So what year was this?
The year that I went to Diane Rourke was 2001, right after October 2001. So it was November, I think, early November 2001.
Okay, so obviously in 2001 there was someone on the House Foreign House Intelligence Committee who thought the NSA program was illegal. And I think I know the answer to the next question, but what did the House do in response?
Well, they basically told her that she needed to go talk to General Hayden out at NSA to get the to understand what's going on, and that she shouldn't be worried because you know, Portagos told her that you know he was aware of all the problems and he didn't see any issues. Well, you know, Porter Goss was supposed to question these things, and he was the chairman of that committee at the time. What Diane didn't know was that he was already briefed into the program, and he was already approving it, as was Nancy Pelosi. And that's, of course, why I maintain that Nancy Pelosi said when she was Speaker of the House that impeaching George Bush was off the table, And the reason she said that, of course, because George had leverage on her. He could have said, hey, if you're going to impeach me, you have to impeach yourself because you're part of all these programs we've developed.
Right.
So, you know, it was the way they brought and co-opted in leadership of the Congress a little bit at a time over the years. And so they're all part of it, so they all have to cover up for one another. And the same is true for the Department of Justice and the agencies involved. So
how so the Department of Justice?
Because the Attorney General down through the years had to approve all these programs.
Okay.
In fact, in the 2004 hospital visit, at one point before that, they were afraid that Attorney General Ashcroft at the time would be indicted for the activity that he approved.
I'm sorry, Attorney General Ashcroft recommended that someone be indicted?
No. The attorneys at the Department of Justice were afraid that he would be the first sitting Attorney General to ever be indicted for approving those programs.
Actually, I think Meese, I'm not sure, was that Meese sitting when he was indicted? I can't remember, but yes, obviously not a good thing for the sitting Attorney General of the United States to be indicted. I think we could agree on that. And so nothing happens after your inquiries in 2001. What did you decide to do next?
Well, I mean, we were, of course, waiting for all the results coming from the discussions between Diane Rourke internally on the committee. But at the same time, we attempted to see Chief Justice Rehnquist of the Supreme Court.
His responsibility vis-a-vis the FISA court. Was that why?
So he appoints the judges on the FISA court, but he's also the one who's to vote. You know, he sits on the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has the final ruling on the constitutionality of any law or any activity of the government.
Right.
So that was kind of his responsibility. So we felt that was the place where this really ultimately belonged. So we didn't have a way to get to him directly, but we knew Kirk Wiebe and I, who were had a subcontract out of the NRO, were trying to work one, knew a fellow there who knew the daughter, Rehnquist's daughter, because he went to high school with her. And so therefore we thought that would be an avenue to get a note through to the Chief Justice that he might have a chance to read, you know, because their staff filters stuff out.
Right.
So that's what we did. We passed the letter through that way, and we know it got to his daughter, and I believe she passed it on, but we never heard any more from it. So,
all right, so you struck out obviously with the administration, you struck out on Capitol Hill, you struck out Supreme Court, then what?
We started talking to other members of the House and Senate. And
were any responsive?
Well, I mean, they would tell you when you're facing them that, oh yeah, there's really something wrong here. But you know, one of them said, "Well, now's not the time to fix it."
Well, when they say now, was it because of the close proximity to 9/11 or the Iraq War?
I guess that's it. But I mean, that really turned into a way of saying, "I don't want to fix it."
Right.
So, I mean, the point is that it's all messed up now, and now's not the time to fix it, right? So that's a statement that could be made any time down through the years. And they still haven't fixed it. So I mean, you know, that's just a bureaucratic way of avoiding the issue.
And so when did you first decide to kind of step forward and kind of go beyond the kind of insularity of Capitol Hill?
Well, I hadn't given up yet because we were also talking to a number of lawyers down in the D.C. area trying to figure out what to do next. We were advised to do certain things. So one of the things to go public, we weren't prepared to do that at the time because we thought we'd still give our government a chance to function properly. And so we still kept trying to talk to different members of Congress and so on for a number of years. And then of course, I didn't, but others gave that same information to the Department of Defense Inspector General's office. And so that went into that way. And then after the New York Times exposed the uh, the warrantless wiretapping program, which is only a small part of the whole program, back in December of 2005, Judge Robertson resigned from the court because what would you do if you were a judge and you were supposed to be doing a job and they were actually going around you and subverting you and keeping you out of the loop so that you became a figurehead that was just something like this is their way of justifying that they were using the third branch of government was involved, mm-hmm. which it is not. The FISA court is not a Article III court. It's a court that sits on the sixth floor of the Department of Justice building, and they meet there and they approve things there, and they only hear the government side. They don't hear any opposition to anything. Article III courts, if you talk to judges, they'll tell you that they are courts that resolve issues where they're opposing parties, and the issue is debated, and they adjudicate based on the law and the Constitution. And so that's an Article III court. So the FISA court basically is an Article II court, an administration. So Article I is Congress, Article II is the president, his administration, Article III is the judiciary. So when they keep claiming that they have all three compartments of government, Articles 1, 2, and 3, agreeing that this is okay and legal, that's false.
Okay, well, we're going to come back to that in a minute. We have to take a short break, Bill. We'll be back with Bill Biney talking about his status and breakout as an NSA whistleblower after these messages. You're listening to Cyber Law and Business Report on webmasterradio.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
You rely on your website to promote your business, and while you're busy doing what you love, you need a site that can keep up. GoDaddy Web Hosting is built from the ground up for lightning speed, reliability, and rock-solid performance. It includes over 150 free apps like WordPress and Drupal to build and manage your site. And with 99.9% uptime and industry-leading load times, you never have to worry if your site is up and running. Visit GoDaddy.com and enter code HOSTFM to get web hosting for $1 a month, plus a free domain. Some limitations apply. See website for details.
BubbleFast burst onto the e-commerce scene as a family-owned shipping supply provider back in 1999. The product line has grown, but Mark and Robin still own and operate BubbleFast as a family business. Being sellers themselves has taught them what online sellers need to safely and affordably deliver their products to their customers. BubbleFast is proud to be an active member of the community of online sellers. Mark and Robin sponsor seller meetup groups, share shipping tips and tricks through social media, and always love talking to customers and helping solve shipping challenges. Check out the website at BubbleFast.com. Sign up for the Bubble Briefs newsletter to join the BubbleFast family. Use promo code WMR. To get a 5% discount, or call Mark and Robin at 877-599-7447. Happy shipping from Mark and Robin at BubbleFast.
Oh yeah, my day is done. Time for happy hour.
You're already done for the day?
Yeah, because I use CertifiedKnowledge.org. Their PPC tools literally save me hours every day.
How do you keep on top of all of Google's new features?
Easy. With Certified Knowledge, their interactive learning modules keep me up to date. And if there's something I don't know, I can watch their video lessons without having to hunt around the Google help files.
Great. I'm ready to expand my knowledge.
Hi, I'm Brett Geddes. I'm the only leader officially supported by Google to teach the advanced track of the AdWords Seminars for Success. I personally recommend CertifiedKnowledge.org as your one-stop shop for all your PPC needs.
Learn, optimize, connect. Be smart. Go to CertifiedKnowledge.org now.
InternetMarketingNinjas.com is the online dojo of the highly trained and skilled Internet Marketing Ninjas. Disavow documents, reconsideration requests, Panda and Penguin penalties. Let our superior SEO ninjas confront all of your link-related issues. The Internet Marketing Ninjas are equipped to master any marketing exercise, content creation, authorship, link building, PPC, and more. Plus, build more buzz for your brand with our social media marketing strategy. Discover all that the Internet Marketing Ninjas can do for you. Visit the online dojo now at InternetMarketingNinjas.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back. We're talking to Bill Biney about his emergence as a whistleblower, a life career NSA servant and expert cryptologist. And he this eventually, but he also said that earlier in our show, he said he's a constitutionalist through and through. And basically, he saw that the NSA surveillance program was not consistent with his understanding of the Constitution, which includes the Fourth Amendment. And so, Bill, we were talking about how you first went to Congress, you went to the Supreme Court, and obviously you weren't getting anywhere with the Justice Department. When did you first decide to start talking to the media and become more open about what was going on?
That I basically decided to do in 2010. And the first opportunity I had to do that was with Jane Mayer in 2011. But the reason I made that decision was because it was after the raid that the FBI pulled on me, because that when we were complaining about this program downtown in D.C., with various people in government, why it started to raise the issue internally in government, and the administration and Department of Justice and NSA didn't want that happening, so they decided they'd send the FBI at us to try to keep us quiet. And so that's what they did, and they raided our home simultaneously under the guise that we were the ones who leaked the story to the New York Times about the warrantless wiretap program. That was the article that they published in 2005. So that was their pretext for doing that, but the real reason was to keep us quiet. So, and after that, of course, you lawyer up, you get legal advice, and what happened was...
Attaboy!
Yeah, you need to be quiet. You know, stay quiet, you keep a low profile, maybe they'll just go away, you know. That's their advice. That was, of course, not the thing to do. But that's what they did. And in a part of that process from 2007, after the raid in July of 2007, all the way through to the end almost of 2009, they made three separate attempts at indicting us. That is, under trumped-up charges, they created these, manufactured these things. But in each case, we caught them and had evidence of exculpatory evidence. So they kept the final one. The final one was we were attempting to get together to develop a corporative effort amongst ourselves, because we were out of government. So we were trying to develop that to address Medicare and Medicaid fraud, because it was clear that they still need a lot of help to stop all that fraud. So we had a way to attack that, and we were preparing to group together to do that. And they used that meeting that we had as a basis for charging us with a conspiracy charge. In fact, they had drafted an indictment, and they called our lawyer and told him that they were going to indict us. Then he called us and told us that. So, but at the same time, I had all the exculpatory data on that too, because I backed up all the data with any number of people, you know, and other people were at the meeting too, that they weren't targeted. They weren't included in the conspiracy, by the way, so it was another part of the evidence of malicious prosecution. So I had assembled all the information that I had that would show that in a court case. So I then told that to Tom Drake over the phone, because I knew the FBI had his phone tapped. And that meant I was giving the data to the FBI, which in turn would send it to the DOJ, and now they'd know that we knew exactly what they were doing and were preparing to charge them with a felony of malicious prosecution when we went to court. And so they dropped the entire thing. But that just showed you how corrupt our government had gotten all the way through to the Attorney General's office. So
was this Eric Holder, or was this the prior administration?
It was 2009, yeah. That was
Eric Holder.
Actually, the indictment was late 2009. We actually went to see part of what probably prompted it was we went to see early in 2009, we also went to see the Inspector General of the Department of Justice, again, about this program. And so that's probably prompted them to try to do another indictment against us. So, but in the process, you see, someone at the Department of Justice felt really bad about what they were doing. And so they, through various channels, I don't know exactly how they got to us, but they passed us a copy of their draft indictment against us. So you could see there were still good people in the Department of Justice. It's just they were being ordered to do things that shouldn't be done, that weren't constitutional or legal. So there's still some hope for Department of Justice, just not with their leadership. So at any rate, that was the last straw. That was the straw that said, look, this is so corrupt, I can't stay inside the government because they'll put me away from in jail somehow, someday or other, and no one will ever know. So it's time to tell the public openly. So that's what I started with Jane Mayer and discussed all that stuff with her in her article in May of 2011.
And what did you disclose in that article?
More about the data mining and data collection of everybody in the country and around the world.
And so this is 2 years before Edward Snowden.
A little more.
And what was the reaction?
Well, it was kind of quiet. Not too many people picked up on it.
Did that surprise you?
I guess if anybody came out saying the kinds of things that we were saying then against the government that everybody would like to trust, right, and basically have, I mean, after all, if you look at our condition here in the United States, we have not had a dictatorial power in charge of this country for almost 240 years. So we're not conditioned to recognize or to even be concerned about that kind of activity because we lived under, in a state of semi-freedom for that period of time without people interfering with them. But now technology was advancing so quickly, it was hard for people to keep up. So it was difficult for them to comprehend what technology was capable of. So, you know, had a couple of hurdles that the feeling of trust for the government, the longstanding democracy that we've been living in, and then the other hurdle of technology, people not realizing the extent of the capabilities of technology today. So that was it's not unexpected that most people would not believe that.
And what did you decide to do after you really didn't get the response you maybe hoped for?
Well, I was just sitting around wondering what we can do now. You know, there's not too much that we were all sitting around here. What should we do now? And then Jim Bamford had called and said he wanted to interview me for an article in Wired. And he interviewed a couple of people in that, a couple of us whistleblowers. So then that started the ball rolling much more because, you know, Jim Bamford had, expertise in NSA and had a reputation of having some understanding of what NSA was all about. You know, so that raised the level of confidence in the public that there really was something going on here, and we should take a closer look. Then we started getting more calls from people Democracy Now, and that Democracy Now also helped expose us to the world. Etzer, when he was on Current TV, had us on several times, so we started to get exposure that way, and it kept building over time. When the Snowden material came out and that started to get published, that's when we got a lot of calls. I mean, it started really exploding at that point. That's because Edward Snowden, when he looked at what happened to us, also what happened to Tom Drake and Chelsea Manning and also John Kiriakou, I guess. I mean, John Kiriakou is a really disgraceful case that the government, I mean, he exposed the name of one of the guys at CIA who was doing torturing people. And so here you have the guy who exposed one name that was never published in the news anyway, but he just let somebody know that this guy was a part of the torturing program. So he was the one who exposed a name that didn't get eventually published, but he was the one they sent to jail for 30 months. And at all the people doing the torture, they gave him retroactive immunity. Now that's an absolute disgrace. I mean, if you think about that, how can you, the guy who talks we shouldn't be torturing, he goes to jail, and the people who are doing the torture, you know, you let go free. Well, I mean, you know, that's not the kind of law we imposed in the Nuremberg trials in the 19th
right.
War. That certainly was not the following the orders was not a valid defense. So at any rate, after all that, I mean that's when Snowden, when he looked at all that and saw what happened to us, he said he had to go and take documentation with him, otherwise he would never be believed. And so that's why he took all that documentation. And when the documentation started coming out, it was impossible for the government to deny it. So now they were caught, and now they had to deal with it.
And what's your take on Edward Snowden?
What's my faith in him?
take on that? Well, do you think he did a good thing, a bad thing? Do you think he should have done more internally first, or?
Well, I mean, we were a classic case of internal avenues that they keep saying he should have used. Will only target you. They will fail, and they will come back at you and try to put you away. I mean, if you try to expose things internally, that's the procedure they did against us, Tom Drake, and everybody else. John Kiriakou. I mean, that's the standard. The standard is you execute the whistleblower, and you, in any way you can, get rid of them, silence them, and put them away. That's basically what they've been doing, and they have not done anything. They've never done anything differently that I know of. So you can expect that kind of thing.
And, you know, in terms of Snowden, would you say he's a hero, or would you equate him with Daniel Ellsberg, or, you know, what box would you put him in?
Well, I look at it this way. I think he's done a public service, a huge public service for everybody in the United States and everybody in the world. And the other point is, I believe he should be prosecuted, but he needs to be prosecuted in the time order of all those who committed the crimes. So that means we have to go back and start charging and trying Bush, Cheney, Hayden, Tenet, all the people in the Department of Justice that approved the program, all the people at NSA that implemented it, all the people at the FBI that also participated, and at CIA, and all those members of the Senate Intelligence the House Intelligence Committees that participated and approved it. Then after we do all of those people in the Bush administration, then we go to the equivalents in the Obama administration. And then in time order, we go to Snowden. So now if we're not prepared to prosecute all those people in those two administrations, there's no reason we should prosecute Snowden.
Well, I think we know what the answer to that is. Right.
But if you want to apply the law equally, as the Constitution says, that's what you have to do.
Now, you've now launched having survived your brush with the NSA, this legal team, you now kind of upped your game, and you're part of an organization that launched a website, exposefacts.org, that tries to encourage whistleblowers. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, the whole idea there is to provide a path where whistleblowers can get their word out, the alerts to the public, where they're dealing with issues that need to be exposed publicly, like for public health reasons or just violations of the rights that people, citizens of the country have, or any kind of thing that is illegal or unconstitutional, or any kind of corruption, fraud, waste, and abuse that's involving our government. Any of that's certainly of interest to the public. So we're trying to set up an avenue for them to be able to get their information about those activities out to the public, and yet at the same time remain and maintain their anonymity in that process, so that the government doesn't come back and attack them like they did with every whistleblower that's been exposed to date. So.
And I know you haven't seen it yet because you were in Germany, and we'll touch on that in a second. But there's a billboard opposite the State Department in Washington, D.C., that in Foggy Bottom, that has a photograph of Daniel Ellsberg, you know, who's the person who released the Pentagon Papers, with a quote that says, "Don't do what I did. Don't wait until a new war has started. Don't wait until thousands more have died. You tell the truth with documents that reveal lies or crimes or internal projections of costs or dangers. You might save a war's worth of lives," quote, unquote, close quote, Daniel Ellsberg. So definitely a powerful statement and targeted clearly to people, as Ellsberg was. Was he at the Defense Department or State Department? I forget. I thought it was a Defense Department employee.
Yeah, he was in the Defense Department. I think he was a contractor at the time. I'm not sure.
No,
but he was a part of the. He was looking over all the documentation for the Vietnam War. So,
and you know, as I mentioned offline, I was actually at a benefit where he was the speaker, and they were honoring his a gentleman from Hollywood who had donated substantial funds to his defense. And you know, this was only a few years ago when he said, "But for Stanley Scheinbaum, I would still be in jail." And so it's a remarkable thing. Now, you were in Germany testifying before the Bundestag. on the NSA program. And did you get any objections from the U.S. government to your appearing in Germany?
No, they did not. Nobody sent me anything about that from the government.
And so what is the – how – I mean, we always hear how angry the how angry everyone is over there about the NSA program. But it's hard for Americans to gauge. I guess you were there, and obviously you got directed questions that kind of you could gauge. Just so, what is the sentiment really of the German, at least the German politicians, over the NSA program?
Well, I mean, of course, it's a mixture of feelings there. I mean, they look at the cooperation with the NSA and BND and cooperation between the German and U.S. governments as an important relationship. So there's then one aspect of it. But the other aspect of it is that the German population is getting angry about is the spying. And it's only really a natural consequence of what they've experienced down through the years. That's the country where they had to live under the Nazis and the Gestapo with the SS. And then in East Germany after the war ended, they said the Cold War started, and then East Germany had the Stasi and the KGB and the NPD.
Yes, and as depicted in the Academy Award-winning film The Lives of Others, quite brilliantly.
Yes, that's right. And that's the reason you've got living memory of what it means to live under totalitarianism. That's really what that means. That's why they're all upset about it, because this is what the NSA and the FBI, in conjunction with the NSA, are doing, is adopting the procedures of totalitarianism. That's where the state needs to know everything about the entire population so they can control them. That's what this is all about. It's about law enforcement and not terrorism. The domestic collection has nothing to do with terrorism. It has to do with law enforcement and population control. I mean, the IRS is a part of the Special Operations Division of the Drug Enforcement Administration, and they look into the NSA data, so they have a view into, for example, everybody involved in the Tea Party or any kind of religion that's trying to get public. That all those relationships are in the data that you get from the phone numbers that they get or the intercept of the emails or anything else that is clearly being done by a program called Fairview, which is documented in the Snowden documents, that shows between 80 and 100 tapping points on the fiber optic networks inside the lower 48 states of the United States. So you obviously know that that's for domestic collection, not foreign. I mean, the fiber optic lines inside, like crossing in Indiana or Illinois or somewhere like that, has nothing to do with foreigners. It's all about domestic collection. And so by doing that, I mean, that gives them information about the entire population. And so this is a J. Edgar Hoover on super steroids, where this is where J. Edgar had evidence or knowledge of all the members of Congress and anybody who had influence. That's why he could stay so long as the FBI director. He had leverage against them for blackmail or whatever reason. And right. this gives them information about everybody in the country.
And so what is anything memorable that you recall coming from the Bundestag?
Well, I mean, they're now Well, I think they're making some good moves. I think they're starting to look at investigations and so on, expanding that investigation. So I think that's a good thing. And hopefully they'll get some feedback to our government that will help them in deciding what they need to do. And collectively, maybe they can help settle something internationally as well. So I think this could all be for the good if people sit down and listen and realize that the path they've been on is not a very good, it's a really ugly path.
All right. Well, unfortunately, the path that we're on is we have limited amount of time, and so we're going to have to break. But I want to thank you for coming, and I hope you'll consider coming back and talking about this further. But if people want to get more information about you and about the organization, where should they look?
You can go to whistleblower.org, and it's a government accountability project site, and you can look at what's going on there in terms of blogging from the Government Accountability Project, And that keeps you up to date on a lot of things that are happening both domestically and internationally. So that's, I think, a good place to start.
Great. And I want to thank you very much for your time, and best of luck to you as you, you know, get your message out. But unfortunately, we have to take a short break. But when we come back, news updates, including a startling revelation about a possible ripoff report, criminal investigation, after these messages.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Before you painstakingly create another label or drag yourself to the post office, set a course to ShipStation, your key to e-commerce shipping nirvana. Save time by easily importing orders from wherever you sell, like Amazon, eBay, and over 40 others. Save money with discounted USPS rates and a free USPS account. Automate manual tasks through bulk label and invoice printing, custom shipping rules, and much more. WebmasterRadio.fm listeners get an additional 30 days free after the free 30-day trial. Go to ShipStation.com/WebmasterRadio now. Shipping Nirvana starts here.
Building better search engine rankings takes the right formula. Tracking those rankings is super simple.
All you need is AuthorityLabs.com.
Authority Labs uses automated daily rank tracking tools to monitor your site's performance or leverage their API to build your own tools. No matter what animal-labeled algorithms affect your ranking,
you should be using Authority Labs.
Unlimited users for no additional cost and white labeling can help keep your clients updated and save countless hours of creating reports. Whether you're running sites with just a few or millions of keywords,
what you need is AuthorityLabs.com.
Looking for a better way to get more traffic and interaction to your Facebook page? Imagine Facebook interactivity on your page like you've never seen. Introducing your new Facebook marketing fix, ZoSocial, the new and revolutionary way to easily manage and automate your Facebook contests and sweepstakes. Create a fun, easy-to-win contest by writing a simple Facebook post. Watch your post go more viral and generate loads of interaction. Track your traffic and generate email lists with ease. ZoSocial is mobile-friendly and complies with Facebook terms of service. Let ZoSocial give your Facebook page some flash today. Zoom over to ZoSocial.com.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart, or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back. This is Bennett Kelly. You're listening to the Cyber Law and Business Report. And I want to thank Bill Biney again for giving us all that time. And we'll certainly probably have him back again to talk a little more detail about some of these things. But we got some news updates we want to share with you. And one is, if any of you have ever been on the website ripoffreport.com, you invariably have seen the photograph of the Iowa Sac County prosecutor, the district attorney there named Ben Smith. In fact, he is on every single one of the 1.8 million ripoff report pages. And and Sac County is a county of a whole, the county seat is Sac City, which has a population of 10,000. I think the county itself only has a population of under 20,000. And they're fighting back. They've just sent out warrants investigating a possible criminal conspiracy involving Ripoff Report that involves jury tampering and witness tampering in a criminal trial in Iowa that was conducted by Mr. Smith. And it's the criminal trial of Tracy Richter, who was tried for murdering a hitman she had hired to kill her husband, Michael Roberts, who some of you may recall was on our very first show. And so a the warrant details that Ed Magison of Rip Off Report and Darren Mead learned that Smith had mobile records and phone records and Mead's deposition, which would have given them actively knowledge that they were investigating them for witness tampering. And rather than cease and desist from defamatory publications, a little over a month after learning that of Smith's investigations, Rip Off Report intensified their criminal actions by publishing false information about the state's witness and Smith, with photograph of Smith on each one of the 1.8 million pages as one of its featured reports. So the law is a powerful thing, just as so is the internet. And so we have an interesting battle. We have a small town in Iowa taking on one of the most feared websites in the world. And so this is a battle you definitely want to watch. Ben Smith is, I know, has been working on this for several months, if not years. And so this is going to be an interesting battle to watch. We'll have more information as this unfolds. Whether this will lead to an indictment or not remains to be seen. But definitely an interesting battle going on there. And obviously, I'm sure there's more than a few people who are quite happy about the misfortune befallen upon Rip Off Report. Today is an interesting day in history. On July 9th, 1982, a very bizarre incident occurred. And a gentleman, or I should be careful in my use of that term, but in any event, a gentleman was able to scale the walls of Buckingham Palace and climb into the bedroom of Queen Elizabeth II. And it caused quite a stir. And ultimately, ironically enough, he was not prosecuted. He talked with the Queen for about 10 minutes, and then he asked her for a cigarette, at which point she then felt comfortable enough to summon for help, and he was taken away. But he wasn't prosecuted because actually the British were afraid that prosecuting them would reveal just how inept and their security was for the Queen, as if this event had not done so. So we thought, in light of this event, we'd have a little contest to see what exactly people may have, what would they have said? You know, what would have been the first thing that the person said as he entered the Queen's bedroom? And what would the Queen's likely response have been? And so far, the best response we got is from a John Fitzpatrick in Orange County, California, who said he put words in the mouth of the intruder, saying, "I bet me mate $5 down at the pub you sleep in a queen-size bed," and which I thought was pretty cute. And then Stefan Gerardet, who actually is a subject of the Queen, although he is, I believe, a U.S. citizen as well, added, "Any room for an intruder in those depends." And definitely a little British cheeky humor there. But so bizarre event. Brasco, do you care to venture a guess in this contest?
We do have one. There was one person that that reached out to me and asked me to do a voice voice the person that was going to be speaking to the Queen. They said, "Hello, Mom. Can you put your teeth back in?"
I got one that was somewhat confidential because they did mention that they were a subject of the Queen, and so they were somewhat reticent. And let me see if I can find it here. But it people are definitely enjoying themselves a little bit with this, and almost as much as some of the Brazil memes that are floating about there. And I think I have it right here. One second. And this is actually from someone with a connection to the this station, but I won't mention who. But he said, "Your Majesty, did you order a massage or the full boyfriend experience?" any event, having a little fun at the expense of the Queen is always, I guess, an American and especially an Irish-American pastime.
We're no worse than the Daily Mail or the News of the World or all those, right?
I know. Actually, we're treating her much more kinder than I guess those would. Today's also an important day in history because today is the day that George Washington ordered that the Declaration of Independence be read publicly. And it was read publicly, and in Philadelphia. And actually, if you've never read it, it's an important document. I mean, there's some very powerful language in there that definitely drives much of our consciousness. You know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and they are endowed by their Creator with unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And speaking of the pursuit of happiness, today is the birthday of one Darren Babin, the owner or CEO of Webmaster Radio.
He's one of the co-founders of the network.
One of the co-founders of Webmaster Radio and NewGen Communication, NewGen Broadcasting.
Right.
And so we just want to be genuine in our thanks, and also clearly brown-nosing the boss. But
happy birthday, Darren.
Happy birthday to Darren. We hope you celebrate it well. And we hope that whatever you do, it's fun enough that we can't share it on the air. All right, so that's all we have for today. Be sure to check out our blog. We'll have more information about our guest and the topic, as well as some links for you to further explore. That's cyberlawradio.wordpress.com. Also, check us out on Twitter at Cyberlaw Radio. And so this is Bennett Kelly of the Internet Law Center here in sunny, warm Santa Monica, California, here at the heart of Silicon Beach. Join us again next week. We'll have another great show with the latest developments in cyber law and business, and we'll be right here. So court is adjourned. Look forward to seeing you next week. Be safe.
This has been a presentation of WebmasterRadio.fm, the world's largest business-to-business radio and podcast network. We welcome you to sample past episodes of this program, as well as our complete library of programs, on demand or on the air via our 24/7 live audio stream at www.webmasterradio.fm. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.